Hey team, just before we get into the first Grit Coaching podcast, I just want to say a big thank you to Monty for helping me with this. It's something I've wanted to do for a long time, and I think it's going to make for a really great resource for everyone. The idea is to interview as many people within the group as we can and kind of hear their stories, and also interview a wide range of people like writers and experts in the field of sports science, nutrition, physiotherapists, sports doctors, just generally interesting people. I've got a heap of other ideas as well, so I think it's going to be awesome. I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, podcasting, but I know there are quite a few people in the group who enjoy listening to things like this. So yeah, it was fun to sit down and talk to Monty. We did it in one take, and it was really a lot of fun. So look out for more of these, and enjoy the episode.
Well, welcome everybody to the inaugural Grit Always Reaching Further podcast. Today is the Friday, the 10th of February. My name is Monty and I'm the convener. And sitting right beside me is Logan Mort, the instigator of Grit Always Reaching Further, Instagram giant in the engine room of the Grit program. So welcome, Logan. How's things going?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Now, for the sake of all the new members, you know, because most of us have been with you for a little while, we know you pretty well, but if we start right off from scratch there, you know, I'd just sort of like to actually ask a few questions about you, because these are some of the things that I wouldn't mind finding out about you. And one of them is, how long have you been riding for?
I'd say I've been riding for about 12 years.
12 years, that's quite a while, really, isn't it? You know, they say it takes around 10,000 hours to get good at what you're supposed to be doing. So, you know, 12 years would be more than enough to do that. But did you start in high school, did you?
Yeah. So that pretty much got me into cycling. I had a teacher in school who suggested I do it. And I had a vague interest in triathlon. And so cycling was one of the disciplines. And it was actually the thing that I disliked the most.
You disliked cycling?
Well, I just, you know, seeing people dressed in lycra and shaved legs and...
I must admit, I still have nightmares about that myself, but yes, I can understand that. So yeah, nightmares about men dressed up in lycra. So what made him think that you actually had the prerequisites of being a cyclist, let alone a triathlete?
I was quite good at running. I did a few cross countries at school, and I was one of the better runners in the school.
God, Zix, you're actually a good runner. I've never seen you run, but I've heard stories about you running.
Yeah. So he pushed me, actually. I sort of made all these excuses, all the reasons I couldn't get into cycling. One was I didn't have a bike, one was I didn't have all the equipment, and he kind of just said, here you go, here's a bike, here's everything you need. And I basically... He gave me about 2 months to get before we'd start racing, and I took this bike home and it sat in my lounge for 2 months. I didn't use it at all. And then just one day he was my tech teacher at school, and he just said, oh, do you want to stay late after school? We're going to have a cycling meeting. And I thought he just meant like we're all going to get together and talk about what the plan was. And he basically said in this meeting, we've got a race tomorrow. These are the teams. He'd put me into a team and just said, I've got to turn up at Mechanics Bay at 5:30 on a Saturday or something. And that was it.
So how old were you then at that stage?
I was like 16, something like that.
So you're literally throwing him out a deep end. Yeah. It's always quite interesting when you start talking to people and their histories and whatever with any particular sport, especially when they become really good. There's always a critical person at a critical time. So obviously this teacher was one of those people. Was he actually an accomplished cyclist himself, or was he more of a triathlete at the time?
No, he was a cyclist. He was just, he'd been riding for a long time. Never, he'd raced a little bit, but nothing like super serious. He was just an avid cyclist.
Okay.
He was a tech teacher, so he was more into the like mechanics of bikes and was always tinkering around with things. And
so I presume this was before carbon fiber bikes were on the go.
So my first bike was it was probably similar to someone's first bike when they're starting in like the 70s, like a steel frame bike with down tube shifters. And yeah, it was a pig of a thing. But
just by point of interest, how did you go on that first race?
Well, this was the thing. So I thought I was good. Like, I was a good runner. I'd done a few other sports, so my like confidence levels were pretty high. And I was shocked to find out that I'd been put in the B team. And so I turn up to this race, and some of the guys looked like they weren't in like the best shape. And I just thought I was going to kind of show them how it was done. And literally, like, I remember as we took off, I remember thinking like, oh, crap, everyone's like really like clipped in fast and they're off. And I sort of struggled to catch back up and get into some sort of a line. And within 100 meters, I was completely...
You're out the back
torched,
end.
Torched, yeah.
Torched.
Like, absolutely ruined. And I just kind of... They just slowly, like, drifted away from me. And that was before, like, the first bend. And then I just kind of continued riding. And I was kind of surprised. I was shocked at how fast they went. Like, I'd done a few little rides, and we'd ridden... I'd averaged about 25, 26 k's an hour, something like that.
Yep.
And these guys had dropped me, and I was sitting on like 33, 34. So I was just shocked at how fast they were going, how fast I was going. And I just kind of continued it and just rode along the waterfront, just kind of, yeah, trying to go as hard as I could.
Trying to hang in there. You know, it's always interesting, those sorts of experiences. I'm always interested in how people respond to that, because literally you had your testicles handed to you by these other people, and that would have been quite humiliating. How did that actually spur you on to train harder, or, you know, did you focus upon those individuals, or did you just want to get better?
Yeah, so I guess it like motivated me a lot to try and get better. And I was just shocked at how bad I was, because one of the things was I'd never really trained properly for something. Like, all the sports I'd done up until then were kind of things that you did. Like, I'd done quite a bit of motocross and stuff. That was kind of the sport that I was doing at the time, and that was a sport where you just kind of turned up and just raced.
So there wasn't a lot of structure in terms of your preparation.
Yeah, there wasn't formal training. You kind of just went out and practiced and stuff like that. But also, I was quite young, so there wasn't at that level and stuff. But when I got into cycling, all these guys were like super focused, and they were, even in the B team, they were getting up early before school and training. And yeah.
So these were actually students. They actually weren't adults. These were actually fellow students at your high school.
Yeah.
And already at the age of 16, had already got into a fairly focused sort of a training program, which was already started. Is that what made you decide? Did you get a formalized coaching process then, or did this coach take over your entire training program?
Yeah, so he kind of coached us a little bit. I guess he coached us, and like he kind of did, really, because he was just introducing me to all these new things. Like, you know, I think he took me on my first kind of structured ride where we did loops of a course that had a couple of climbs in it, and he sort of said, you know, on the climbs try and keep it at this cadence and this sort of effort level. And that was kind of the beginnings of it.
There wasn't a lot of data feedback in those days, though. You didn't have a computer on board, or certainly no power meters.
Not at that stage, no.
Yeah, no cadence. So how was that? Was that just all done now? Here, this is how you do it. You know, spin your legs a little bit quicker.
Yeah. So it was basically just ride really fast up this hill, take it easy on the downhill.
Okay.
Ride easy on this part, then ride hard here.
Yeah, it really, you know, in the space of, 12 years, we've gone from that whole process, quite rudimentary, to really dialing in all these details, haven't we?
I think as I was looking back, at that point, I just didn't have any understanding of what I was doing. There was a lot of, heart rate monitors, and I guess power meters definitely weren't a big thing. Like, they were there, but only, I mean, I don't think I knew anyone that had one.
Right.
It was more like a couple of the pro riders who were overseas might have had one. And even then, it was more just heart rate. And I eventually got a Polar heart rate monitor a couple years down the track and probably spend another 3 years not knowing how to use it. But yeah, there were some things there, but like he was a tech teacher and just a cycling enthusiast. He wasn't a coach per se. So.
Yeah. Although I guess probably having the mechanics and having being a tech teacher, there's always that whole process about tech teachers and engineers in general. They always have a cause and effect type sort of mentality, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Although, yeah, that must have been really fascinating. So you obviously started sort of building up your baseline knowledge in there, and you made reference to the fact that you got a heart rate monitor, 2 years later, and it took you 2-3 years to actually learn how to use that properly.
Mm.
You also, after high school, went into further study into the whole area too, is that right?
Yeah, so I kind of got hooked on it at school and continued to do those races, continued to sort of work my way up a little bit. There was some really good riders at the school, so I had like a good sort of like carrots to kind of chase out training and stuff, and we just go out and just smash ourselves, and it was a really good group actually. Then when I finished high school, I kind of didn't know what else there was, and I was kind of struggling a little bit and kind of trying to figure out how I'd keep this going, because I'd really only found it quite like in a relatively short period of time at uni.
Yep.
So I felt like I hadn't really sort of given it a good go yet.
Yeah, well, age 16 is a pretty late entry into a sport that you would eventually become a professional at. So I guess that must have been close towards the end of high school.
Yeah.
And university was coming up within a few years ago or so, and so you would have been only just starting to come to grips with the sport in itself. So did that actually drive you towards making that career choice in the end?
Yeah, so I basically went to uni because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do 100%. So I thought I was really enjoying cycling, and I had another PE teacher who was he was quite into like sports science and things like that.
Right.
So he kind of exposed me to that. So then I thought I would basically study it at uni, not knowing like where it would take me or anything like that. But also I wanted to try and progress in cycling, because I'd had this massive improvement in sort of a couple of years. I'd gone from being like dropped in the B team to one of the faster ones in the A team, and it seemed to just like excel quite quickly. So then I thought, well, I don't have a super hectic schedule at university. I'll put a lot of effort into training. I just thought, oh, I'll pick something crazy that I can do and just work towards that. And so
what exactly was that crazy thing that you decided to work towards?
Oh, I thought I'd give K2 a go.
K2, okay.
At the time, my longest race was 50 kilometers.
Okay.
And this was like 180.
And were you doing Counties Manukau racing at that time?
I think I just started maybe halfway into that year. So this is like 2006, okay, maybe.
And yeah. So 2 years after you'd started, you had a crack at K2. How did that go?
Yeah, so it was quite good. So at this point, about halfway into the year, I was like really struggling with training, and I didn't really feel like I had any direction and kind of...
You were at university at the time?
Yeah, I just hadn't built up enough sort of knowledge or experience to kind of know what I should be doing, and I would get to like the weekend and I would do these massive long rides, and then I'd be smashed for 3 or 4 days, and then I'd kind of maybe do a ride during the week, and then I'd finally feel good enough in the weekend again to go out and smash myself again. And so I just didn't really have this consistency going. And there was a group of riders that some of the guys at my school had kind of continued to ride with. There was a guy, Frank Clark, who actually runs the Tour de Rangers race now.
Yep.
So he had this little Sunday group. I actually went and asked him for coaching, but he was more into triathlon and didn't really feel like he had a lot of experience with the whole road cycling scene. So he had a friend, his name was Egbert. He was a Dutch guy.
Yeah.
And he was like a pro cyclist back in the 80s or something. He was like a real good cyclocross rider, and so he was super knowledgeable. He used the heart rate monitors and knew a little bit about power as well, and knew heaps about racing. So he he started coaching me, and he was kind of the sort of guy who would like push me a little bit. So I just wanted to complete K2. He said, no, you have to enter the elite race and try and, you know, like you're young and stuff, so you should be racing with those guys.
Yeah.
So the first race I did outside of school was K2, and it was the elite race. And it was much harder back then because it used to be Tour of Southland used to start on a Monday and K2 was on a Saturday.
Yep.
And they used to do K2 and then they all used to fly. So you'd have all the pro guys. The elite field would have like 30 or 40, maybe even like 50 people. And they're all the like Tour of Southland bunch.
So that really was a baptism by fire.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and so it started in Thames and I was dropped up Copa.
Whoa. Mind you, that's not a unique experience in itself. And I was just, you know, you were making the comment about going and doing long rides on the weekends and taking the entire week to recover in time. It seems to me that the tenure of your coaching program, at least in terms of its effects on me, hasn't actually changed.
Yeah.
So what stage did you decide to become a coach?
So then, yeah, I guess the cycling progressed. I ended up getting to race overseas a little bit more, all over, like through an Aussie and doing the NRS series.
So that happened probably within about 4 or 5 years you were racing overseas?
Yeah, I'd say from 2008 to 2011.
Okay.
That took up a big chunk. And so I was kind of studying part-time in between while I was going away and stuff like that.
What were you studying at the time?
So I was studying sport and exercise science.
Okay. So you were also adding on to your academic background as well as getting the practicalities of racing on the road, adding to that arsenal of background and knowledge.
Mm.
So, you know, that sort of carries on through. And so as a coach, when did you actually formally start coaching other people as well? Because having all that background knowledge in terms of experience on the road, and hot fire experience too, and then also having that sports science background, when did you start leveraging off that as a coach, do you think? How long did it take you before you started coaching people?
Yeah, it was probably, I think it was the end of 2012. That's when it was kind of formal. That's I started position with GMC coaching.
Yep.
And that was where it all kind of started. I started, got my first client when, that was probably, maybe it was November.
Okay.
2012 or something.
Pretty rapid transition, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it, you know, starting from high school and in a matter of 5-6 years being a coach.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then also racing competitively overseas. It's pretty quick.
Mm.
Very quick.
I definitely felt quite young when I started. I think it was 24, 25.
Some people will still think you're quite young now. So in terms of that, you know, obviously you had an inquiring mind, you know, and that sort of added to that. So as times, you know, when did you were doing bunch rides, you were doing individual sort of coaching at that stage. You were also doing all the work on Training Peaks and later, more lately, What's Today's Plan. You know, when did at some stage, when did you start considering all these other sort of strings to your bow, like doing videos and going onto Instagram, the Facebook pages, podcasts like we are doing, and name tags? You know, is that something that's just happened organically?
Yeah, I guess as I've coached, like when coaching's kind of evolved as well. So when I first started, like when I was being coached, you just got an Excel spreadsheet with some workouts on it. I would do my training and I would just fill in the Excel spreadsheet off my like Polar heart rate monitor, because that was like the monitor to have, not the Garmin.
Yeah, that was a be-all and end-all, the heart rate, wasn't it?
Yeah. And so it was, yeah, it was like you would just get a plan and then you would sort of comment on it. There's no like real data at that stage. Most coaches were using like Excel and stuff like that. And but then when I was being coached, that's what it was like. And then when I started coaching, I started using Training Peaks straight away.
Yep.
And that just kind of changed everything, because then you get all the data. Everyone uploads all their, basically you get everything that they've done. You get
Yeah, that was a watershed moment when that sort of software and accessibility to it actually came into the market, didn't it? It must have been quite groundbreaking for you as a coach, and obviously for the athletes who were getting leverage out of that too.
And then I think, so back then it was more the coach had all the training sessions and things and kind of all the information, whereas I think today people have the information a lot more, maybe not so much how to structure it, but what's lacking is kind of like support and, you know, I guess like the community kind of thing, like...
I think one of the things that, you know, looking at points of differentiation, there seems to be quite a few, there are a lot of coaches out there, of course, and it's an individual decision in terms of that. And for my own personal point of view, I've always liked the personal, the individualized process of it, and that sometimes, you know, the data shows that you're probably not ready to do what you hoped or expected to do. And it's quite good to actually get that sort of feedback and the interplay that exists between a coach and the athlete in itself is quite important. That's I think that's the next step in terms of coaching, is trying to get that sort of relationship going. And that seems to be one of the principal changes, I think, that's been enabled by all this data sharing between the two individuals. Would that be fair enough to say, and as time has gone on, that you've been able to sort of get more leverage out of that data between the individual and personalize it more?
Yeah. So then you're able to get a better picture for how the person's responding, but then you actually, from there, you know, have to create like kind of support systems, I guess, and try and people have more knowledge, but you have to sort of like filter some of that knowledge as well.
Yes, focus it and remove all the distractions that might in actual fact be getting in the way.
Yeah.
I guess that gives us a quite a lovely little segue into the establishment of GRIT, Always Reaching Further. You know, is that part of the philosophy, that one of the philosophies and visions in the establishment of this group? You know, taking into account you started, was it in August last year, September of 2016?
I think officially it was July.
Okay. So, before we go a little bit further with that, how did you come up with the name GRIT? I love the name. You know, I really love the name. It's pretty cool, and Always Reaching Further. But where did that come from?
Yeah. So then coming up with a name was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done, because, you know, I wanted to create this like culture within the team, and I was trying to search for names that would kind of like encapsulate like what I was trying to give people.
Yep.
And I guess you know, we were talking about all the information and everything that's out there, like, you know, I've got that kind of sports science background, all that kind of information, but I also wanted to try and create individuals that have grit, basically. They have, you know, they're disciplined and
into the finish. It was a great name, because it's you know, you obviously came up with it fairly organically, but and more recently there's been the actual term itself has actually been formalized for a few years in itself in academic circles by Professor Angela Lee Duckworth, who also coined this phrase of grit. And it was about her definition of grit was that it's about passion and perseverance, but not for the sprint. It's all about being there at the finish. It's more of a marathon than actually being a sprint. And so this seemed to really appeal and it seemed to really, as an image in itself of the group of people that were there, there were some pretty gritty characters.
Yeah.
And it was such a fabulous sort of an idea. So moving on, you had a great name, and obviously the next step was trying to get a presence out in the marketplace. Who designed that fabulous kit?
That was Belinda Duffy.
Belinda Duffy from Toot, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. And so where did the colours come from and the actual design? Because it looked pretty Hornster.
Yeah, so I wanted something that looked cool but kind of stood out and provided safety for people, so that, you know, cars and they could see them. And so I'd initially gone to Champion Systems and talked to them about designing something, and basically the the kit that I wanted to model it off was, I don't know if you've seen the Team Wiggins.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's like a dark red with like blue sleeves. It's real simple, but it just looks real cool.
It's quite striking, isn't it?
Yeah.
Quite striking.
So I sent them my ideas, and they basically just spat it out exactly kind of what I'd said.
Right.
But, you know, in your mind, you have all the little touches and things, and but because I'm not a designer, I didn't really. I was frustrated that I couldn't really express what I wanted, and but they were sort of my only option at the time, so I sort of went ahead with it, and I paid the deposit and all that sort of stuff. And but then Belinda messaged me and said, "Oh, I heard you're looking for kit, and I'm keen to show you some design." So I kind of met up with her, thinking. Like just because I felt bad and I didn't want to say no.
Right.
And so I met up with her. And
well, she's a pretty persuasive character, as Belinda Duffy. You know, for those of you who don't know, she designs she runs Toot Kit, and is a fairly forthright individual, but very well justified in doing so. If any of you have seen any of her kit that's out there, so I can imagine you being falling under her influence quite easily there, Logan.
Yeah. Yeah, she showed me these designs and stuff that she'd been working on and just kind of blew me away. And
yep.
So I was like, yeah, sweet, we'll go with that.
I can actually remember the first three or four people that I saw with the grit kit on. I remember feeling very, very envious. In fact, I was quite hacked off that I didn't have it, especially when you did your first team group photo.
Oh,
I think it was down by the Brito Mart. I felt very left out that I wasn't able to do it. But it's a pretty cool kit. It's certainly very visible. And it seems the supply seem to be it's a pretty good supply chain too. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Very short order span. So who is actually doing the orders now for that?
My partner Emma.
Okay,
She's taking that over because as I've gotten more busy, the group's grown quite quickly. So
you've had to devolve some of those responsibilities to the workers, haven't you?
Well, Emma, she's awesome. She's great at that sort of stuff, so it's worked out really well. She's so much more organized at that kind of thing than I am.
Goodness me, good plug away there. I can see plenty of hot dinners being served as a consequence of that statement there, Logan. Well done, and unprompted too. Now, moving on to the grit kit itself, and the grit group, it's been a pretty interesting sort of group of people that you've gathered around. It's some very interesting group dynamics and some pretty amazing characters in there. Do you have any intentions of actually getting some of those characters in? You know, I was thinking perhaps about Carl Wells, you know, with his burgeoning professional career. You know, we've had some interesting people within the group. Will that be one of the plans in terms of future podcasts, do you think?
Yeah, so that's one of the things I'm really excited about is I think, you know, we all chat to each other when we're writing, but I think some of the guys just, they're so diverse. Like, they're, you know, everyone's got a common goal of trying to become a better cyclist, but if you talk to people individually, they're usually quite successful in their own area. Mm. So, you know, like Carl Wells, he's a professional orchestra musician and
a French horn player.
I'm sure he'll love to come and chat. I just think it'd be cool. Like a lot of the people in the group have a lot to offer. And I think, and definitely like when I was starting Grit, like I knew what I was going to do with the coaching side of it, but I had this whole sort of, I didn't know much about how to start a business or how to, you know, even sort of promote things. And there's lots of stuff that I'm not very good at. So, and I'd say most people in the group, like, put quite a bit of time into helping me. It's been, like, they're just as much a part of it.
Yeah, well, you know, to be frank, you reap what you sow, Logan. And I think people are always enthusiastic about helping out the newbie and getting behind it. But, you know, fabulous stories. And, you know, there are lots of great stories out there. Even in your story, you tend to belittle, in actual fact, your achievements so far. But what you've done within this grit group has actually been stunning. Some great stories. You know, one of the other stories too, I'd love to hear about, if you get the chance, is to leverage a story out of that guy Paul Coles.
Oh yeah.
About him going away to the World Amateurs. You know, fabulous story last year. And Al Davidson, you know, who actually rode across the United States.
Yeah.
Now, you did their programs, you know, two totally diverse events. One, I think, was about nearly 7,000 kilometres in 28 days. Yeah. Absolutely outrageous stuff that Al did. And then you've got another individual who, Paul Coles, who lost so much weight and ended up climbing up hills like a buck rabbit, and he goes away to World Amateurs in Perth. So you basically ran their programs for you, didn't you? And you individualized that whole program. So, you know, that's a incredibly diverse range of stories just there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know how you did it, but I heard rumors that you managed to get Alice Chaplin, probably one of our slickest female riders in the grit group, who managed to do a personal best of, what was it, 4 hours, 13 minutes around Taupo with very little training. That was a pretty stunning training program too, I hear.
Yeah, I think she was quite surprised with that.
Oh, well, I think that's the quality of the coaching, isn't it, Logan? Stunning achievement. Now, for those of you who don't know, Alice Chaplin is this diminutive little person who has got so much firepower in her that people misjudge her at their own peril. Now, those of you who've done around Taupo will be pretty stunned to be able to go out in under 5 hours. Well, Alice whacked around there in 4 hours, 13 minutes, stunning time. So incredible. So that's an example of the sort of talent we've got running through this group. And it's must be quite exciting for you.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Quite exciting.
Keeps me motivated.
Yeah, I'm sure it would keep you motivated. It'd probably keep you on your toes too in terms of demanding more. So in terms of that, you're already in a fabulous place now. What's on the horizon in terms of the short and intermediate plans and goals for Grit in general? What do you hope to do with it in the short term?
I just want to keep doing what I'm doing, keep refining the process, keep trying to add value, make it, you know, like a better kind of experience so they get more out of it, learn more. And then there's a few, so, you know, that side of it, the coaching part of it. I've got all sorts of little processes and things that I'm working on to try and give people, like, more feedback and more resources and things like that, you know, like videos. And there's a few little partnerships with companies and things that to try and offer value.
And expertise within the industry itself. I see you're setting up a strategic alliance with a nutritionist. Is that correct?
And,
well, those are opportunities to be explored. And I suppose biomechanists and the like.
Yeah.
So, you know, that all sounds very, very exciting. There are obviously, you must know, quite a few people in the industry who would be, you know, who have got incredible expertise. You know, we were listening to a number of podcasts the other week about the intricacies of lubrication of chains, for example.
Yeah.
Not that we'd ever get so into those sort of esoteric levels, and not in the short term anyway, but I presume you'd be seeking to bring a few of these experts that you know to these sorts of podcast opportunities?
Yeah, so hopefully we can get some experts in the field. I've got a few old uni lecturers and even just some young riders we could have a chat to and get their stories, how they started.
Yep.
I guess one of the main things is hearing stories of people that kind of start from humble beginnings and build themselves up. A lot of the time people just see them as being really, you know, have everything and know what they're doing. But, you know, everyone starts somewhere.
It's the classic thing, isn't it? We see people at mid-flight sometimes, obviously, at the Olympics, but, you know, in racing, or even just on our bunch rides, and we forget that that's just the end product of thousands and thousands of hours, often, of preparation just to be that good. And obviously with the support that actually comes from coaches and other members of the group that they ride with, you know, that's often those are the sorts of stories that we need to be reminded of too. So that sounds as if it's going to be a fabulous series of opportunities to actually enlighten us with that too.
Mm.
So I think probably we've covered quite a bit of what we wanted to actually cover in terms of this first podcast. Yeah. I think it was really more about, I hope that it was going to be about talking more about you and what you've achieved so far, and hopefully what we will be looking forward to achieve, not only within the grip, but with these podcasts, et cetera, et cetera. And it sounds like there's a massive body of work that we can leverage upon and use in the future, either yourself or with other people. And feel free to find other moderators to speak with you too. Yeah, you know, don't feel obligated just to use me. You know, I might have this tremendous voice, but don't feel obligated to use it all the time. You know, I'm sure that people like Paul Coles and what have you might be able to sort of render some very, very interesting commentary as well.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of brings us towards the end of this particular podcast. I think it's gone rather well.
It has, yeah.
And Logan has just sent me a little message to say to encourage people to put down their comments on the comments below this podcast, wherever you might find it. And we're going to make it a fairly private affair. It'll only be going through the private group on Facebook at that point in time. We don't want to be media sort of giants with that are going viral at this point in time. That's for the future too. But if you've got any suggestions in the future as to what could be spoken about and what could be covered, or indeed you've got some curiosities about different people, cycling related, mind you, not anything else, then we would love to hear from you, or certainly Logan would love to hear from you. Either get in contact with him via the web space, via his Facebook page, via the Grit Always Reaching Further private group, seminar groups, or just give him a telephone call if you've got his contact details. That's it for us. Thanks, Logan, for coming along, and that's good night from us.